And thanks so much, and happy birthday to John Hamilton. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7. Coming up is going to be your evening news. The time is 4:59. First, we have to talk a little bit about how KBOO programming is made possible by our KBOO member listeners and support from Levin & Levine, LLP, attorneys specializing in personal injury law. Levin & Levine offices are located in Southeast Portland and Old Town Sherwood. More information available by phone at 503-946-8708 and online at levinandlevine.com.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Program Advisory Committee meets the second Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Outside the Frame Migration on Thursday, November 7th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. Outside the Frame trains homeless and marginalized youth to be directors of their own films and lives. Their annual gala showcases a collection of short films by and about invisible communities in plain sight, young Honduran trans women who walk to Oregon, houseless folks forced to migrate in their hometown, and much more. Again, that's Outside the Frame Migration on Thursday, November 7th from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Hollywood Theater, 4122 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, election results are in and Democrats benefit.
Gordon Sondland makes his return to Portland.
And the proposed conscience rule restricting health care has been struck down.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 6th, 2019. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. All four measures on Multnomah County's special election ballot have passed. The new measures will renew property taxes and strengthen the protection of the Bull Run watershed, the source of drinking water for the city of Portland and many surrounding municipalities. The new bonds passed will do a few things, including preserving new natural areas and existing parks, and sustain the public school levy, which pays for one-third of the district's teacher salaries. Turnout was low, according to the county election site, with only 29.5% of registered voters submitting a ballot. However, the turnout level was not unexpected. Voter participation in off-year election cycles is often low.
President Trump made the Kentucky governor's race personal. In an appearance in Lexington Monday night, he said Republican Governor Matt Bevin losing would be called Trump's, quote, greatest defeat. You can't let that happen to me, he said. By a margin of over 5,000 votes, Kentuckians made it happen, electing Democrat Andy Beshear. Bevin has not yet conceded, however, which could cause the election's winner to be determined by the state's Republican-controlled legislature. In Virginia, Republicans lost both houses of the legislature, giving Democrats the upper hand in the post-2020 census redistricting process. Virginia's Governor Ralph Northam is also a Democrat. With Democrats in control, Virginia is now expected to become the 38th and last state needed to approve the Equal Rights Amendment that Congress passed in 1972. And in Virginia's Loudoun County, Julie Briskman, who got global attention when she was fired in 2017 for flipping off Trump's motorcade as it passed her on her bicycle, defeated a Republican incumbent for a seat on the County Board of Supervisors.
Yesterday, Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland amended his October testimony in the impeachment investigation, saying now that there was an understanding of a quid pro quo agreement with Ukraine. Hours later, Portland Mayor Ted Wheeler announced that he would be donating the $16,000 Sondland had given to his election campaigns. In a press release, Wheeler's campaign manager said, quote, "The mayor made it clear that he wanted to give Ambassador Sondland the opportunity to explain his involvement in the Ukrainian scandal, especially in light of the acknowledgement of quid pro quo and the testimony of Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. It has become clear that Sondland's actions are potentially counter to the law," end quote. The funds will be split amongst various organizations, including Basic Rights Oregon, Transition Projects, Portland Parks Foundation, and others. Wheeler has been a vocal critic of the president. Some of the money from Sondland will be going to ImpeachNow.org. However, he has been slow to condemn Sondland. Sondland returned to Portland last night and was greeted by protesters at PDX chanting, "Hey, Gordon Sondland, tell the truth. Hey, Gordon Sondland, we're watching you."
Locally, Metro's $3 billion transportation measure will not be on the ballot until next November, but some of the proposed projects are already drawing concern. One of the dozens of 350 PDX members who were at the recent Metro Council meeting said, quote, "We need a Green New Deal for transportation, not billions of dollars for fossil fuel infrastructure." Included in the current measure is $35 million for an overpass at the frequently clogged Northeast 82nd and Airport Way intersection. The Port of Portland will contribute the rest of the $87 million total. Protesters see the overpass as only benefiting cars with no clear safety benefits or advantages for low-income communities. This summer, a coalition of climate change groups forced the State Department of Transportation to delay a planned $500 million expansion of I-5 through the Rose Quarter to further study environmental impacts. Voters yesterday approved Metro's $475 million bond, which will be used to buy more green space, approve existing parks, and support programs in cities and counties within Metro's boundaries.
Outside the Frame is a Portland nonprofit that works to train homeless and marginalized youth to be the directors of their own films and lives. The hard work of these youth will be on display tomorrow evening at their annual gala screening. KBOO's Althea Billings sat down with Neely Yosha, the executive director of Outside the Frame, and two of the youth filmmakers involved in the program to learn more about the gala and their creative journeys.
I have with me today Neely Yosha, the executive director of Outside the Frame, and two youth involved in the program, Adeline Vasquez and Narcy Smith. Thank you all for being here with me today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Awesome. So let's get started a little bit by talking about Outside the Frame. Neely, could you tell me about how that got started?
Outside the Frame got started as a program at Outside In 10 years ago. I was hired to work with youth, and I was like, what can I do with a group of transient young people with so many different skills and interests and no tolerance for BS? How can I do something with them that matters to them and will show the world how amazing they are? Movies. So started making movies there, and when the grant ended, it became its own organization, Outside the Frame. We train homeless and marginalized youth to be the directors of their own films and their own lives, because we like to have a good time while making the world a better place.
Yeah, very cool. So, Adeline and Narcy, how did you get involved with Outside the Frame?
It started back in the summer when I did the internship.
Okay. Narcy, what about you?
For me, it was 3 years ago when, in the midst of me being chronically homeless, there was a recruiter at Outside In, and he was like, "Yo, do you want to create film and create your story?" And I was like, I thought my dreams were like done for. Like, I wasn't ever gonna like do anything in film or media. And then it was like this opportunity that was still there. I was like, okay, you're definitely gonna take this. And like, I was just engaged with their program, and I haven't left them ever. They're very great. They helped me create some money in my pocket and really, they helped me strive for my dreams and achieve my goals. And like, all of the goals that I've created in Portland and with Outside the Frame, I've accomplished my goals. And like, it has to do with like this team of wonderful people that want me to be me, and they help me shine.
That's awesome. And so, since you've been a part of the program, Narcy, you touched on that a little bit, but Adeline, is there stuff that you've learned, stuff that you've been able to be a part of since you got involved?
Yeah, like, I've learned a lot because, like, during those times of being homeless, like, you really use a lot of your faith in yourself, and, like, there's a lot of faith, like, just lose it all, you know, and then, like, coming to this little internship, you know, like, there are people here that, like, just showed you and, like, let you know that, you know, like, even though you are, like, have a lot of barriers, you can still overcome and, like, succeed and, like, accomplish your goals and stuff like that. And so, like, with this internship, it showed me a lot, like, with the films and, like, how to screen write and, like, stuff like that, and, like, how to
collaborate
that way. Yeah, like, you know, it helped me a lot to collaborate and, like, open out themselves and, like, hear different people's ideas and, like, make something kind of alive and beautiful, I guess.
What did you make? Tell us about your film.
The first ever film I made, I am Native American, so it's like, I'm not very traditional, so it's like, how can I be part of the community and be a part of a movement? And there's organization called Mixed and Murdered Indigenous Women, and like, it tells us about how, like, as Indigenous women come up missing, and it's very rare that it's on entertainment or any news and stuff like that. And like, it's just so much about it, and like, I wanted to be like, how can I be involved? So like, I made this film, like a little short little film about like how easy or how common it is to come up missing when you come from the bay to like an urban city, and like how easy it is to like, yeah.
So, speaking of movies, I understand you are hosting a gala tomorrow evening, November 7th, at the Hollywood Theater at 7:30. So what all is going to be screening there?
Addie's film, We're Still Here, is going to be there. Films that...
Doomed to Repeat, which made Best of the Northwest short film category in 2018.
Yeah, what is it about?
It's about ICE. It's to point out how horrible it is, how families and teens are being wrangled up like they're monsters or something. And it's quite bogus because it's all about this wall that was supposed to be built, which like, it doesn't help anyone, because like, people can weld right through anything and they can always dig a tunnel to the other side, and it's like just trillions of dollars that went into the garbage. And it's like, yo, America, we are civilized, smart humans, start acting like it and stop segregating everything else, because when you cut off a problem or like try to suppress it, or like thinking that everything's going to be good on one side but the problem's still there, you gotta work with problems that are there instead of just trying to cut it off and believe it's gone, because it's not.
So the program is going to have, it's going to start with some personal films that the youth have made through our workshops about topics such as these. We give them a platform to get out what they need to get out inside of them, and it's the zeitgeist, you know, missing and murdered Indigenous women, the wall, all kinds of things like that. But the main program is going to be a series of telenovela-inspired shorts that we created for Oregon State University to be part of a toolkit to combat social isolation and stigma among Latinx youth. So we got queer Latino youth to... Yes, Narcy, tell us about it.
And also, with these films that we're going to be seeing tomorrow at the gala, they're really stories that have really impacted each of our storytellers. Like, these stories aren't just out of our head. There are things that queer Latinos like deal with, and
And they'll be used to combat, you know, all the ills of homophobia, that shame, stigma, all the way to suicide, you know. And so making films helps the people making it kind of look at and close a chapter, but the films themselves help the audience, and that's what we're doing. Edna Vasquez gave us the music for the theme song. We're very excited. We're also going to be giving a Lifetime Achievement Award to Kathy Oliver, the longtime executive director of Outside In. So it's going to be a packed, fun evening of, like, original, amazing films. Is there anything you want to say about the films or the program?
You know, outside of fame, you know, like, it does help us homeless youth, because it's like nowadays, you know, like, you're a youth, you know, you don't know that much, and then being homeless on top of that, like, it feels like you don't have a voice, or like Nelly says, like, a platform. And for them to allow us to have a platform and, like, show us, tell people that, you know, like, yes, even though we're homeless or still a youth, we still can have make a difference and still have a big voice or a big impact, even though just because we're homeless or youth, we can still use the platform.
The films are amazing. All the filmmakers will be there, so it's a chance to come and meet the filmmakers, rock out with Edna Vasquez, eat some popcorn for a good cause. Doors open at 7:30. It's all ages. It's kid friendly. It's sliding scale. Anything that people want to give goes to support the filmmaking programs. Films about homelessness and immigration. I mean, doesn't get any more relevant than that. We're calling the event Migration, Stories of Migration by Homeless and Latinx Youth, and it's people that are that have migrated either from other countries or forced to migrate in their own town, right? People living outside have nowhere that they're allowed to be. I want to add that the program we did with Oregon State and LACE, engaging Latinx youth as allies of change, was supported by a grant from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And Narcy, you'd said that you were chronically homeless when you joined the program. What's happening now?
Well, after 2 years of being rock bottom, I'm pretty much a production assistant to two places. And I work at the Moda, and I'm about to get my first place on Friday.
Wow!
And that's a big, tremendous thing. I didn't think my life would ever turn around and feel so complete. And it just keeps, life keeps throwing these bigger treats at me, and it's like, it's a horse pill to swallow, because it's like, it feels like all these amazing things are making me choke.
Well, I'd like to thank my guests for being here. Adeline Vasquez, Narcy Smith are youth filmmakers, and Neely Yosha is the executive director for Outside the Frame. A gala screening of the work done by these youth is happening tomorrow at the Hollywood Theater starting at 7:30 p.m. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
For KBOO Evening News, I'm Althea Billings.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Culture in Motion with Mick Crenshaw, where your host will be speaking with the legendary Curtis Blow. At 6, it is First Voices Radio. Then at 7, it's Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather, partly cloudy, have a low around 42. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high near 57, should be a little bit breezy in areas of town as well. Today in history, in 1917, Russia's Bolshevik Party, led by Vladimir Lenin, launched a nearly bloodless coup against Russia's provisional government. The quote of the day is from another Lenin, this one John Lennon. If someone thinks that love and peace is a cliché that must have been left behind in the 60s, that's his problem. Love and peace are eternal.
Today, a federal judge voided the Trump administration's conscience rule, which would have allowed healthcare providers to refuse to participate in abortions, sterilizations, or other procedures that they disagree with on religious or moral grounds. According to U.S. District Judge Paul Engelmeyer, the rule was unconstitutional and, quote, shot through with glaring legal defects, end quote. The suit against the rule was brought by two dozen states, municipalities, and health advocacy groups. They argued that the rule favored the personal views of the healthcare workers over the needs of the patient. Many groups argued that the rule would have disproportionately harmed LGBTQ patients, among others. New York Attorney General Letitia James, who led the case, said in a statement, quote, "The refusal of care rule was an unlawful attempt to allow healthcare providers to openly discriminate and refuse to provide necessary healthcare to patients based on providers' religious beliefs or moral objections," end quote. The conscience rule was part of a multi-pronged effort by the administration to strengthen the rights of religious health providers and restrict abortion access.
Well, just like the Farmer's Almanac, our KABU News poet, Dan Raphael, thinks it'll be a long, harsh winter.
As winter approaches, plants withered by wind and dryness, the cold becomes real, physical, to amplify the abstract chill and panic that's been building for months. In Game of Thrones, they said winter is coming, knowing winter could last years. Trump's winter is already here, and it could last another 5 or more years, but hasn't fully manifest, trickling down, this internal coup dissolving our government, our faith in some core principles and structures. Trump has shown what cynics have known. No one is in charge. The wealthy are above the law. Billionaires and corporations get more from the government than they pay in. Laws and taxes are how the few control the many, denying us what we've paid for, what many of us need, setting us against each other instead of them. The darkest hour is just before dawn, but we haven't come close to how dark it can get. When someone kills someone over a chicken sandwich, when PG&E spends money on lobbying instead of maintenance, causing California to burn, when there's only two parties and we're not welcome in either. For Poetic Justice, this is Dan Raphael.
A new Las Vegas homelessness ordinance is the subject of a protest rally today. It would make it a misdemeanor to sleep or camp on public rights-of-way. As Suzanne Potter reports, the latest statistics show that about 5,500 people are homeless in Southern Nevada on any given night, an area with only about 2,000 shelter beds.
Advocates for Nevadans who are homeless and civil rights groups are protesting today at Las Vegas City Hall just before a public hearing on a controversial homelessness ordinance. The council is considering making it a misdemeanor to sleep or camp in public rights of way near homes, on the Strip, on Fremont Street, the Medical District or Arts District, or close to a food processing facility. Wesley Yule with the ACLU of Nevada warns that could worsen the problem by forcing some people off the waiting list for housing known as the Community Queue, which already has 1,800 names on it.
So if one of those people were to pick up a citation and not be able to pay it or have this jail time on their record, that would take them out of the queue and make them unavailable for housing.
The ordinance includes language that would make it unenforceable if the city's shelter beds and public sleeping courtyard are full. Mayor Carolyn Goodman has defended the idea, saying it's designed to give people who are chronically homeless an incentive to accept help at the shelters while addressing the crime and sanitation concerns of business owners and residents. Reno has adopted a Housing First policy that prioritizes affordable housing and mental health services. Yule says Salt Lake City has had major success with this approach.
So they've adopted policies like that, and their chronic homeless numbers have gone down like 72% since they've instituted it.
A violation of the proposed Las Vegas ordinance would carry a $1,000 fine or 6 months in jail. The city of Boise, Idaho, passed an ordinance last year banning sleeping and camping in public spaces, but it was overturned in court and is currently under appeal. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
When London police banned protests on October 14th, it was unlawful. Lord Justice Dingemans and Justice Chamberlain ruled that the police had overstepped their authority. The police's October action was aimed at Extinction Rebellion, whose climate protests have been disrupting London traffic for months. Ellie Chowns, a Green Party member of Parliament, said, quote, "Extinction Rebellion protesters have been raising the alarm about the climate crisis. We need to listen to that alarm and not outlaw it."
After yesterday's election, two Native American women have won seats on the Lawrence, Kansas School Board for the first time in the city's history. The women say this will give them an important seat at the table. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Native vote hit Kansas Tuesday night. Two Native American women ran for and won positions on the Lawrence School Board, which they say gives them a seat at the table. The women have already worked on Indian education issues to make positive change by serving on advisory committees and the renaming of a school. Rhonda Lovaldo has more.
Election night in Douglas County, Kansas, saw two Native women vying for one of four spots on the Lawrence School Board. Thought to be a historic first for the city that is home to Haskell Indian Nations University, both candidates are also alumna of the Tribal College. When the results, which are still unofficial, came in, both had made the cut. Paula Smith, Sistan Wahpeton Oyate, was elated.
I've never done anything like this before, so I guess my anxiety and excitement has just really turned into, I'm so like on cloud nine right now.
Carol Kadu Blackwood Kickapoo was also elected to the board. She already had worked to get one of the middle school's name changed to Billy Mills Middle School and legislation passed that allows high school students to wear their tribal regalia for graduation.
I'm the only official to have gone kindergarten through 12, Haskell, and hold two degrees from KU. So I hope to serve as a mentor and a role model.
Kadu Blackwood received 8,294 votes for third, and Smith had 6,935 votes for fourth. The top four were elected to the board. This is Rhonda Lovaldo for National Native News.
In San Juan County, Utah, voters were asked to determine if a study committee should be appointed to consider a change in the county's form of government. As of Wednesday morning, results show Proposition 10 was narrowly voted down, KUER reports. Navajo leaders spoke out in opposition of the proposition, saying it was an attempt to undermine Navajo voters. Navajo people won a majority of the county commission last year. The proposition recommends expanding the size of the three-member commission. Officials in Wyoming are looking to close a law enforcement loophole on the Wind River Reservation. Wyoming Public Radio's Savannah Marr reports.
The Wind River Police Department is run by the Federal Bureau of Indian Affairs. That means it can only arrest and cite offenders who are tribal citizens. So if a Wind River officer pulls over a non-native for, let's say, speeding, that officer has to call for backup from a state or county officer. And Wyoming Highway Patrol Colonel Kevin Haller says that sometimes that process just isn't worth the hassle for either department.
If it's not reckless driving, it's not driving impaired, then I think it would be reasonable that if a trooper or deputy is requested and they are an hour away, it is most likely that the violator will be released.
Haller says he and the Wind River Police Chief are looking at getting some Wind River officers cross-deputized to enforce state law on the reservation, regardless of whether the offender is a tribal citizen. State lawmakers are also considering a bill that would accomplish the same thing. Eastern Shoshone Business Councilman Leslie Shakespeare is a former officer with the Wind River Police Department. He says that legislation would improve public safety on and off the reservation.
Individuals who commit crimes, they don't stop at any imaginary jurisdictional line. So being able to enforce one another's laws, I think, would be a big boom for being able to address the issues with our public safety and drugs and traffic.
For National Native News, I'm Savannah Marr.
A quilt to raise awareness of missing and murdered Indigenous women was unveiled at the South Dakota State Capitol Tuesday. The quilt was created by Patty Provost in a sewing guild in Sioux City, Iowa. It will be on display at the South Dakota Capitol in Pierre. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Wednesday, November 6, 2019. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories and tips at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Dan Raphael. The producer, engineer, and director of Evening News is the amazing Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Michelle Coppola.
And I'm Erin J. Bernard. Coming up Thursday morning on KABU. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, it's Voices from the Edge, progressive talk radio from a grassroots perspective. At 9, it's Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's weekly look at the news you're not supposed to know. At 9:30, it's Fight the Empire. At 10, Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Between the Covers. Ken Jones interviews Leland Chuk, author of the novel No Good, Very Bad Asian. And at 11:30, it's Black Book Talk, where author Renee Watson introduces her latest work, Some Places More Than Others. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on KABU.FM or on iTunes or Google Play. Want a third way to listen to all your favorite KABU programming? Then download our mobile app today.
So I'm on the phone with Curtis Blow. You are listening to Culture in Motion, the twice monthly radio show on KBOO.FM or 90.7 FM if you're actually living here in Portland, Oregon, where myself, your host, Mike Crenshaw, has guests on, and we have a conversation about art, music, culture, activism, politics. And I have a very special guest tonight. We've got Curtis Blow on the phone. Curtis Blow, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing mighty fine. I'm blessed. Thank you guys for having me on the show. I appreciate it. All right.
So, Curtis Blow, I grew up, you were one of the first people responsible for blessing my ears and my heart and consciousness with this sound, you know, rap music. And we would later come to understand it as part of hip-hop culture. So, you've been doing... I'm going to ask you a few questions about your work as an artist, but I also want to segue into the Hip Hop Nutcracker, which is why you're going to be in Portland. But how long have you been doing what you do as an MC, as a rapper?